Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our 60 Minutes With series, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment world. My guest today is radio personality TJ Hart. People in the Gainesville, Florida area know TJ as the voice of The Sky 97.3. This is more than a news hound, though. He is also a very, very gifted musician. His day job, however, does keep him somewhat busy, running a 50,000-watt station and being the news and programming director means that he has lots of little things to attend to. I got an email from him. He's running just a couple of minutes late. So before I introduce TJ, I want to play a song by him. It's called The Game. I do hope you enjoy it.
Was it a night? Is it Steve?
TJ's latest creation. I think it's a very interesting song. It's very deep, and I'm still having some technical problems getting TJ on. So I think we're going to go to another song. Obviously, this is not the order that I planned this interview in, but we just have to roll with the punches. This is called A Week Ago.
I had my first sunny day a week ago. And you know, it wasn't bad. I won't see me no more cloudy days. I'm gonna put them all in the past. I had my first sunny day a week ago. And you know, it wasn't bad. I won't have me no more cloudy days. I'm gonna put them all in the past. I had my first sunny day a week ago. And you know, it wasn't bad. I watched my children playing happy games that I once played as a lad. You see, I kicked that drag cocaine. I left it lying there cold and lame. Oh yeah, I became a shell of a man. Till I got me a hell of a plan. And I kicked that dirty drag cocaine. I left it lying there cold and lame. I became a shell of a man. Till I got me a hell of a plan. And I kicked that dirty drag cocaine. I had my first sunny day a week ago.
Well, unfortunately, we are still having some technical difficulties. It's one thing operating out of rural Mississippi, which seems to be working fine, but apparently operating out of a 50,000-watt radio station is a whole different ball of wax. So I will just continue with the music. This song caught my attention because it is so unusual. I'll just put it that way. It's called Cedar Key.
I'm standing on the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Cedar Key. Got a little bottle in my right hand, I'm trying to save what's left of me. I've seen those hurricanes blow ashore, I've watched them roll back to the sea. Sometimes I think those hurricanes, baby, remind me just a bit of you and me. I'm standing on the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Cedar Key. Got a little bottle in my right hand, I'm trying to save what's left of me. I watched those palm trees bend in the wind, I've watched them snap back again. I think the key to you and me, baby, somehow I gotta learn how to bend. Bottle in my right hand, I'm trying to save what's left of me. those palm trees bend in the wind. I watch them snap back again. I think the key to you and me, baby, is somehow I gotta learn how to bend. Well, I'm standing on the shoulder of the Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Sheep Key. Got a little bottle in my right hand. I'm trying to save what's left of me.
Okay, finally we have our technical problems resolved. TJ, it is great to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you very much. You know how it is. The limousine broke down on the way to the gig, man.
So, I
haven't gone into music full time, so I had to play the part of busy executive and just some loose ends I had to take care of. But thank you for playing my song Cedar Key. I love that one. Whoever came up with that one sure had something going.
Right. In fact, we're going to start this interview again. But I just to set the stage for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your radio career? Because, you know, most people know you as the voice of the Sky 97.3.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm born and raised in a little town in northwest Indiana, just outside of Chicago, the great rural, before you get into the great urban, and it was all farm country from where I was, but having influence on a lot of Chicago radio and TV stations, so I got a good sense of a good variety of different musical influences being from around there. I saw my uncle, my dad's brother, play guitar. I was a little boy, and I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. And at five, I got my first Sears Silver Tone guitar, and I learned how to play Down in the Valley, Valley So Low, and Old MacDonald, and a few other things by chords. I was just learning how to read, words, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then, the alphabet and everything, and it came together pretty good because the music was almost like a second language there as well. But as far as the radio goes, I started out in radio at age 15 doing sports when I got injured playing sports, and it led to a nice career in music radio for the most part, rock and roll, and then about 20-some-odd years in country music. I got bored, went over to news, and somehow or another the music just never quite left me, and right now I'm writing music while delivering news. So,
didn't you also have a stint as a weatherman?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. And that was some of the most fun I had, because when I did TV, they wanted to get a radio person who not only knew, radio news and had a little bit of a science background, which I do, an earth scientist, but they also wanted to have somebody who was a little bit of an entertainer, a bit of a card. And I said, well, what the hell are you waiting on? And they signed the papers. And we kind of did it in a way where I got paid not by the hour, but by per show. So, and that would be every 30, and the show was in the contract is every 30 minutes. Well, this was before they started doing these big morning long news shows. So whenever I would fill in for the morning meteorologist, I would get paid because it was a two-hour thing. I got paid for four shows every day. And by the end of the week, I was making more money than the chief meteorologist, and he said, hey, this stuff stops right here. I said, sorry, man, I got a lifetime contract, and we had to live with that for a while. So, but that was a lot of fun. It was indeed a lot of fun.
I'll rephrase that question. How long have you been in Gainesville?
Gainesville. I've been here for 7 years, as of August 1st, so 7 years and 1 month. Got here in 2004, and that's when the hurricanes hit Florida really, really hard. And I thought it was the welcome wagon, and I had no idea what the heck was going on. Charlie, Francis, Gene, Ivan, it was an ugly mess. I never saw so many blue roofs in my life, so it was definitely something. We were trying to figure out what the hell we're going to do because in 40 years, Gainesville, which is pretty much landlocked, hadn't had a hurricane since, you know, Hurricane Donna. That was 1964. And we had a bunch of us guys who had all lived up north. We looked at each other and said, well, this will be easy. Just do it backwards from a blizzard coverage, where instead of people being cold without power, they're going to be very hot, very humid, very uncomfortable without any power, and really no place to go because nothing will be open and there'll be no electricity. We did that, and we pulled it off, and we wound up becoming an award-winning news station in my first 13 weeks here, just because of that, just going old school. So.
All right.
You do the dangest things when your back's up against the wall, Simon. You really do.
You do. Actually, because you're a little bit late getting on, I had to fill in, and
mm-hmm.
I played a couple of your songs.
Good.
Right. I thought that might excite you, but I think they're worthy of another spin, because I have lots and lots of questions about them. And I think I want to play The Game, because...
Oh, that's one of my favorites. Oh,
right. I think it's a tremendously well-put-together piece. So this is The Game.
Was it an act? Is it staged? You made it all and you fade away. You ask yourself now who's to blame. Look at you, you're in the game. You act your part just to lose your job. You lose your wife and you lose your God. Still you ask now who's to blame. Forget who is in the game. This old world is changed.
And the words are also fairly complex. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the background to this particular song?
Indeed. In fact, this is a very important song to me, not only because it reflects a little bit about what I'm going through, but it reflects a lot of bit about what a lot of people are either going through or perceive that they're going through. And music is a lot of emotion wrapped up with the ability to link it together with something melodic. And a melody for me is something that just races through my head, and I better catch it with a butterfly net real quick or it might go away. That one, I happened to be, it was a Saturday morning, and I was coming into my radio station to catch up on some work, and I have my guitar there. My primary guitar is at work for, because during the lunch hour, I'll just play a song or two and, you know, kind of get things going. But I had that, and I started working on that, and I started working on some different chord changes and some different ways of playing both the rhythm and the lead at the same time, which can be very difficult, but I got it. And I was reading a story online earlier that day about a bunch of people who did everything they were told to do in order to complete their tasks for their work. It turns out that the folks on the top didn't have a good plan, but instead of firing the planner, they pretty much took care of the people who executed the plan, which was the workers. And here these folks are thinking that they're doing the right thing. They're showing up every day, and dadgummit, if they didn't lose their jobs, and you know, I've seen people go without work, Simon. They get depressed, and sometimes it leads to broken marriages. Sometimes you lose your faith in yourself and other people, and sometimes in your own God. And to be quite honest with you, I needed to have a good sit down with myself, because you know, I get angry too, and realize that I'm 51 damn years old, and you know, I'm not gonna play the game no more.
I'm always curious about the writing style that a musician has. It's a question that I often ask. You know,
yeah.
In what order does a song develop? Some tell me that, you know, that they'll start with a verbal phrase. You know, that they will write essentially a poem, and from that poem, the music just comes to them. Others tell me that a song starts with a musical phrase, a chord sequence, or sometimes just merely a few single notes. What's your view? Do you start with the words, or do you start with the melody?
Actually, it can go either way for me. It depends on which is more powerful at the time. Usually I'm thinking thoughts and I'm having a lot of emotions, and sometimes it all comes out at the same time with the expression, and it turns out to be both at the same time. But primarily, I will try to capture an emotion. I'll try to set the scene with the music, and then the words come very honestly and very easily once that scene is set. So I go to the emotion, I go to the paint the canvas, the musical canvas with the music, and then the lyrics sometimes fill in. However, with the game, it was a little bit of the music thing that was just gnawing at me, but the thought and the emotion was overpowering. So it came out to be a pretty good ending to that song with that line.
And based on that, I think I want to play another track. A week ago. How do you feel about that?
Well, folks, the song is going to pretty much. I just had to come to a recognition one day, and that's how I'll leave it at that till the song plays, and then if you've got any other questions, I'll fill it in.
Right. Okay. Here's a week ago.
I had my first sunny day a week ago, and you know, it wasn't bad. I won't see me no more cloudy days. I'm gonna put them all in the past. I had my first sunny day a week ago. And you know, it wasn't bad. I won't have me no more cloudy days. I'm gonna put them all in the past. I had my first sunny day a week ago. And you know, it wasn't bad. I watched my children playing happy games that I once played as a lad. You see, I kicked that drank cocaine. I left it lying there cold and lame. Oh yeah, I became a shell of a man. Till I got me a hell of a plan. And I kicked that dirty dry the cocaine. I left it lying there cold and lame. I became a shell of a man. Till I got me a hell of a plan. And I kicked that dirty drag cocaine. I had my first sunny day a week ago.
I am a music fan, a music reviewer. I'm a book reviewer as well. And pretty much I can read a book and I know a great deal about the author before I interview the author. And I feel I have a similar hunch about musicians. They like to tell stories. There's a story behind this song. I just know it.
Yeah, back in the early 80s, I had a little flirtation with substances and got over them damn quick. I knew right fast that some of this stuff I was liking way too much, and it was not liking me, and I had to just divorce it and get on with my life. I did, and I never, ever, 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 ever forgot what that was like, and I never will, and therefore, you're not going to see me put stupid stuff in my body ever, ever, ever again. And later, after I did this, I kind of dedicated this song to the Club 27. That would be the Jim Morrisons, the Amy Winehouses, the other people, Kurt Cobain, folks who checked out way too early because they were going down that track, and you know, it took them before they took it out.
Okay, let's change the subject to something more fun.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've listened to your songs, and I like to spot influences. Who would you call your mentors in the music world? Who do you like to listen to? Who do you feel is an influence on your writing and style?
I was very happy to have grown up at the time that I did in the early 60s, where on any given radio station, for the most part, you were able to hear anything from Bach to Brahms to Buck Owens to the Beatles, and it really didn't matter. It was just, you know, who was making a good record at that time. You know, I could hear Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley within the same 15 minutes on the same radio station, so I was very blessed to have a lot of influences. A friend of mine, Waylon Jennings, probably had a real good influence on me as far as performance and how to deliver a song, how to paint that song. But some songwriters, I have to really tip my hat to some folks, maybe you do or don't know, Mac McAnally, Steve Forbert, of all people, David Gates from the Bread. Musically, I don't think he was the greatest musical interpreter, but I think the guy could really paint a song. He could really, really paint some words and really deliver a good message. But as far as other folks, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, those guys were all great. George Harrison, a great songwriter and a pretty good performer late in his life. All these guys all these artists had an influence on me, I would say, to a great deal. Johnny Cash, for his blunt honesty, I mean, the guy just didn't care. And when he did his American recordings, he just didn't care. And you know what? When he stopped caring what other people thought, he made some of the best music in his life. And too bad it was in the last 15 years of his life that those recordings came out.
But you tell a story. I think I've heard it a couple of times. You were age 21.
Might change with time. They just good like wine.
Nah, you were what, age 21 and relatively well known in the radio scene. Didn't you introduce famous guy?
Oh, thank you for reminding me. I was a 21-year-old kid working at a radio station in Springfield, Illinois, and the legendary Marty Robbins had come to a venue called Nashville North, and Marty was getting ready to go on stage. I'd already interviewed him and everything, and he was feeling fine. I mean, he had just ridden his motorcycle. He just top of the world. He's kind of a daredevil of a fella anyway. And he noticed that I was looking at his guitar. He said, "Do you play?" I said, "Well, I attempt to." He threw it at me. And he said, "Play me something." So I did. I think I played Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain or something like that. And I said, I gave it back to him. I said, "I hope I didn't knock it out of tune." He said, "No, you can't knock this guitar out of tune." He said, "By the way, that wasn't bad." He said, "It wasn't great, but you're young." And he went on stage, and I introduced him as Columbia recording artist Marty Robbins. And then got word 2 days later that Mr. Robbins had died. That was the last show he ever did.
It's so sad, but it is just a wonderful, wonderful story.
Except the ending.
Yeah, except the ending. When you dialed in, you caught the last few bars of what I think is one of your most interesting songs. So I'm going to bore you by playing it again, Cedar Key.
I'm standing on the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Cedar Key. I got a little bottle in my right hand. I'm trying to save what's left of me. I've seen those hurricanes blow ashore. I've watched them roll back to the sea. Sometimes I think those hurricanes, baby, remind me just a bit of you and me. I'm standing on the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Cedar Key. I got a little bottle in my right hand. I'm trying to save what's left of me. I watch those palm trees bend in the wind. I've watched them snap back again. I think the key to you and me, baby, somehow I gotta learn how to bend. Show call Cedar Key. I got a little bottle in my right hand. I'm trying to say what's left of me. I watch those palm trees bend in the wind. I watch them snap back again. I think the key to you and me, baby, is somehow I gotta learn how to bend. Well, I'm standing on the shoulder of the Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Cedar Key. Got a little bottle in my right hand, I'm trying to say what's left of me.
Okay, I've got to admit that the first time I listened to this, Jen was listening as well. As soon as it ended, I just looked at her and I said, "He's been to Margaritaville."
There was a heavy influence. Syracuse is a nice little drinking village with a fishing problem here in Florida.
Right. But I really saw a Jimmy Buffett influence.
Oh, heavy, really heavy. I tell you what it was. That song was the first song I'd written in 10 years, and it was Easter Sunday, 2005. In 1995, I had finished up holding what I called songwriter nights at a small venue in Illinois, and I had also stopped doing any kind of band or any kind of solo, engagements. And you know, I just backed it up, and he said, "You know, I'm 35. I'm too old for this. Nobody wants a 35-year-old guy playing a guitar." So I quit. And then here I am at 45. I had only maybe touched the guitar a time or two just to make sure it was in tune, make sure you know I still had one. And my family was still in Illinois. They were dealing with the very slow decline of my mother-in-law. I was so stubborn, I had to take this job down in Florida. So I'm down here in Florida. I'm living in a rat hole in the rough side of town. one-room apartment, and it was in the hood. It was really bad, and my escape was to, on occasion, go to this little island called Cedar Key, which is about an hour away in the Gulf of Mexico. Got very, very introspective, and I decided, well, what the hell, I'll try to write a song. So the intro, the instrumental, that's been added. That was just added a month or two ago, whenever I redid it. But I decided I'm going to do this backwards. Instead of doing a song that you normally would traditionally do, I'm going to do the chorus first, then the verse, then the chorus, then the verse, and then repeat the chorus, a verse, and a verse. And so I did it all backwards. And if you notice that, you know, I'm standing on the shore of a Gulf of Mexico, a place they call Cedar Key, that part's the chorus, and I change the other things for the verses. Well, I said, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good song, I think. And I kept it under wraps for about five or six years because I figured, well, if I liked it now, it's just because I haven't written one in 10 years. So I gave it 6 years, and if I liked it in 5 or 6 years, I'd start playing it again, and that's what happened, and I did. So I think it's going to last the test of time for me. And when it gets fully orchestrated, it'll be very nice.
Oh, I think it is such a wonderful, wonderful song. The music industry is really not a nice one. The business model of the... I mean, the business model of the 70s and 80s was truly ugly. The only winner was the record label. It wasn't very long ago that I spoke with Ken Hensley. Ken was the glue behind the mega band Uriah Heep. That might ring
yeah.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, he published a book and a CD. They were both called Blood on the Highway, and very much they were an autobiographical exploration of his life. The band went on a sellout world tour, you know, playing 50,000, 60,000 seat stadiums. They got home, and discovered that they owed the record label money. They were in the red. The label explained, well, booze, cocaine, and limos do cost money, you know. I mean, I'm sure you've heard similar tales.
Oh, yeah, because I was on the radio end of it in the 70s and 80s and 90s. You know, when the record, the artists would actually show up at your radio station, you go, who the heck are you? I remember this one guy showed up. I'd never heard his name before. And it was none. And I had to ask him his first name a couple of times because I wasn't sure I was getting it right. And he wound up doing pretty good for himself for a guy who came in having us to beg us to play his record. His name was Brooks, Garth Brooks. I don't know if anybody ever heard of him. Then another fella, another skinny fella, by the name of Neil McCoy, did the same damn thing not much later. And, you know, they both had pretty good careers. But I'll tell you, I've seen the bust in both them boys had. And, you know, if there's a half a bag of potato chips between five guys, they were doing lucky some days. And that bus was not necessarily top of the line, the first one they had. And it took a lot. And the funny thing is that you can tell the ones who paid attention a little bit to what the hell was going on and how well it was going. Brooks decided he was not going to look at the checks too much. And I don't think he had any idea that he had the money that he had the first two or three years he was on the road. He was so committed to being successful that he was just going to work, and no stupid stuff. But some of the rock artists, I've seen those guys when, you know, hey, you know, how you doing? Ah, doing great. The record's doing good. Got a tour. Great. You know, then you see them two or three years later, and, you know, you run into the guy and, can you buy me a sandwich? And I don't know if it was them being irresponsible with money or just not understanding how it all worked, but I think the guys who understood that the record company is going to make what the record company is going to make because that's what the record company does, and they took whatever money they were going to get selling records to use that as a platform to go out and sell the tickets for their live shows, which is where they made the big load of their money. You know, those are the ones that, you know, had a better run at it, and at least were healthier about it.
Okay, so what is T.J. Hart's cunning plan to avoid this?
T.J. Hart, well, T.J. Hart's in the market to get a real good producer, that one that's been kind of, T.J. Hart's probably going to do an independent project, whereby we're going to do these things. We're going to do these things honestly. We're not going to overproduce these things. When this project gets underway in full force, right now we're just picking up, doing the rough demos. This will probably be a iTunes project. You know that the automobile industry is going away from having CDs in the cars. Slowly but surely that's going to disappear. It's going to go by the way of the 8-track or the cassette. And you'll be able to play your iPod or something like an iPod in your car. So I'm going to go with that route and do this very much electronically. And I'm going to serve it where the people are listening to music right now, which is on their computer, on their iPod, on their telephones, for that matter. So I'm going to be where they're going to be, and we're going to market it that way. I would like to be able to sell albums, and the working project on this is songs for my eclectic guitar. But if it just goes out as a bunch of singles, that's okay too, because for 99 cents, folks in the future will be able to buy the ones they want. If they don't like, you know, something makes them feel bad, or just by making them feel as good as or empowered as they want them to, they're not stuck with the, you know, 99 cents worth of something they're not going to listen to. So going to try to be customer friendly and just be a little old music, man, and play the hits.
You know, I listened to your ideas, and somehow it goes against the grain. I'm old and long in the tooth. Yeah, I'm 55, so I've got a couple of years on you, and there's something magical about having a tangible item. I love vinyl, for example.
I do too, and it's a shame they went away with it.
Right, and it has nothing to do with the musical quality and, the need for a tube amplifier. The mere size of it gave you a sense of wonderment that there's so much great cover art out there. And that's gone away. The CD has taken over. And, there's still good cover art, but, it's smaller. But you can still hold it in your hand. You can't hold an MP3 in your hand.
I would love to make an old-fashioned 45. That would tickle me to no end to make an old-fashioned 45 RPM record. You know, the kind I used to buy for, 60 cents at Sears every Saturday when we went to town. It's, 60 cents, dude, I got $3 back to the monkeys,
Right. But, the MP3 world, the cover art is gone.
Oh, yeah. It is, and that is a shame. But there are also things called websites I could use to perhaps have something a little bit more visual, as the folks would play, as they would say in the Clockwork Orange, a bit of the fuzzy warble.
Right. Okay. That sounds
That's
like...
That's what I'm calling MP3s these days. The Malcolm McDowell has used that term, the fuzzy warble.
Right. Okay. On the subject of Clockwork Orange, well, not quite.
Yeah.
How about we play London Fog?
Let's do that.
Getting lost in a London fog.
Okay, about 7 or 8 months ago, I reviewed a documentary series, and it was about fine art, of all things. The gentleman that narrated it is one of England's greatest art historians and art critics. His name is absolutely unpronounceable, so I won't try and butcher it on radio. But the title of the series was "Every Picture Tells a Story," and I've got to admit, when I heard this song, I already had part of the backstory in my mind. And it came from a conversation that we had a couple of years ago about your potential foray into good old or jolly old England. Do you want to share a little bit about that story?
Sure. Back in, I think it was 06 or 07, something like that, I had an opportunity, a very unique opportunity, because in England, my understanding is that most of the radio and television stations are owned by the government, BBC, and there are only a handful of private owner-operators, and this was one of them. It was in Liverpool, England. They have their beautiful studios high atop the St. John's Beacon in Liverpool, overlooking the Mersey, and into Wales, and you can see the Irish Sea and everything else from there. And if you Google it and look it up, take a look at the City Talk, and it's a radio station in what looks like the Space Needle. And we were down to the last several candidates. They wanted a Yank, as they would call it, to come over to be the program's director. And they wanted to teach their fellows to do talk radio like Americans do. And then the news had broken about Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers here in the United States. But the economic forecasts in England were far worse. The economy was starting to tumble right around 2008 when it started really getting rocky. And then as time progressed, the candidates got down to a handful. Received a phone call and received a letter and an email, all to make sure that we got the word that they were going to suspend their search. It would be far too costly to move a foreigner from the United States over to Liverpool in order to make this all work. And, in my mind, I was already there. I mean, paperwork was pretty much halfway filled out. My family kind of was getting prepared that I might be doing this. So I even had an apartment right there in Jersey, ready to go. But it didn't happen, and I was very heartbroken by it, very very much so. But I've been blessed in the years to know a good many people from jolly old England, including Simon Barrett here from originally from Newcastle. Also, folks from Portsmouth and from London as well, from the UK. And this song is a little bit romanticized about how I felt about perhaps living there, and also about the people who have touched my life from the great UK. And I just put it all together, and it was a little melancholy, a little haunting, a little, I really want to be, but I can't have this. And that's how that song came to be. The explanation took far longer than the song.
In my mind, there are two types of musicians. There are those that love the safety and security of the studio, the ability to edit and overlay and go back and change, and there are musicians that prefer the adrenaline rush of the stage. What is your poison?
Poison is the stage. The studio, you go here on my first recordings, once I first started doing the demos, that I was very careful. I would only play the guitar as a small accompaniment. And now when I'm on the stage, I mean, I'm it. I mean, I got to do it all. And that's what I wound up doing. I said, you know what? This sounds kind of contrived, some of these songs. They sound like they're too careful. Where's the edge? Where's the spirit? You know, where's the swinging from the seat of your pants here? Where's the honesty? Where's delivering the story that you're trying to tell people? I'm trying to tell a microphone. I'm trying to tell a recording unit this story. So when you hear the newer version of Cedar Key, which you just heard, which is very rough, by the way, but I like it better this way. When you hear The Game is probably the best example. You're hearing what I would do on stage. I'm not going to hit every note, and I don't care if I hit every note. I'm going to tell the story. I'm going to look at you. I'm going to stand and deliver. And if you like it, hey, great. If you don't, pretend like you don't know me. That's fine. I'm good. Drink up and try the veal. But I am going to tell a story. I am going to share with you some stories that are happy. I'm going to share some stories with you that are sad. I'm going to share some stories that will make you think and make you upset, too. But when you get done, you might be as drained as I am, but you will be entertained. And that's what it's all about for me, is that stage and having that one-to-one with folks. Because you don't know what's going on if they're listening at home.
Right. I've got to admit that I love live performances. I think it was about, 4 or 5 years ago, I conned Jan into attending a concert. I managed to snag press passes and, you know, photo creds for Crew Fest, Motley Crue. All right.
Hey, girls.
Right. I mean, she'd never heard of them. Yeah, you know, she's a good country and western gal. So I explained that, they were a country rock band.
You rascal.
We had great seats. They were pretty much front row, but we were off to the side to, you know, avoid the fights and stuff.
What's a Motley Crue concert without a Motley Crue?
Right. There was one band, I think they're known as Papa Roach. And the lead singer with his wireless mic, you know, just leaps off the stage and starts climbing around the auditorium. I mean, it was really quite something. You know, you can't do that in a studio.
No. Not without somebody saying, hey, we don't have insurance for that now. You know, they get all crazy about that stuff.
Right. Actually, not long ago, I was talking to a well-known musician, well-known as in household name, and he'd just released a CD, and he was going on tour to promote it. But there was one track that was just destined for absolute greatness, but it was a studio track, and he openly admitted that he had no idea how he was going to pull this off live.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the Beatles stopped touring?
Right.
Who can do this? He's nuts.
Of course, people like Keith Emerson, someone else I've talked to.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, his solution was, we'll just take the stinking studio on tour with us. I mean, he's the only
person. That's what Todd Rundgren did.
Right. I mean, Emerson took his Moog synthesizer with him, and this thing filled a room.
Oh, God, yeah. That thing was huge. It was like an arsenal. Oh.
I do have to ask you, what drew you to the guitar rather than the piano or keyboards?
My uncle, I watched him play it when I was a kid, and he went off and had a pretty good little career of his own. He actually, unbeknownst to him, he was playing in California, he's playing in New York City. He was in New York City, and he had been playing a little bit with Saturday Night Live banner in the mid-70s, I guess, when the show first started. And, so he always had some tales. I said, I got to play that guitar. So at five, I learned how to play. But I want to share this one story. My uncle, my dad just smiles and shakes his head. He's like, oh, yeah, he's my brother. He had come to the house in Indiana when I was still in high school. And he said, pull out the guitars. And we were pulling out the guitars, and he was drinking beer and everything. He says, I'm not supposed to tell you this. I said, what's that, Unc? I was at the Gilda Ratner's apartment. I'm going, oh, God, I really don't want to know this. And he said, oh, no, it's not like that. I said, well, what happened? He says, well, they asked us if we knew any of that music from, like, 1960 to 1962. And he said, well, yeah, graduated in 1960. I know all that stuff. So they gave him the sheet music. So you got Paul Schaefer and a few other guys and Unc playing guitar there. And they had no idea what was going on. And then two guys jump out of Gilda's bedroom and start doing the vocals. And the two guys were Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. And what they were trying to do is see if the thing called the Blues Brothers would ever work. And they did it at a party. And they did about 8 or 9 songs. And they just wanted to see if they could pull it off. And I'm going back in time. I said, well, how'd it go? I said, pretty good. He said, that John can sing. He said, but that Dan, nah, he can't sing at all. He says, you might want to watch for it. He said, it'll be funny if anything else. But he says, they are pretty good. I thought, the beard got him, But no, it turned out, 6 months later, boom, I'm a soul man.
Oh, that is a great story, and it's certainly one I have never heard before.
Well, I thought he was just, being honky, because he's been known to, tell some good ones. By the way, folks, if you're looking on the internet, if you're looking for some other great music, maybe by a female artist, I've got a cousin by the name of Jessie Roach out of Texas, and she does have a record company deal, and she is starting to do very well. And I tell you what, she's just as good looking as I am, except for much prettier and softer features, because she's a young gal. But she's also kind of tiny. In fact, her guitar is almost bigger than she is. But if you check her out, Jessie Roach, Roach, she got some great music out there. And I think you find yourself to be a fan.
Are you self-taught?
Yes. I did take a lesson once after I'd been in a couple of bands. And the instructor... The instructor said, how do you live so long, first of all, because he thought I was nuts. And I said, well, little this, little that. He said, show me what you know. And I showed him, and he says, well, you're very interesting. You know how to tune the guitar. You know how to strike the chords. You know how to produce sound. But he says, you know what it means? And I said, to a degree, I've got a comprehension. And he says, I understand that you have come up with some songs. He wouldn't say write, because that would be an affront to anybody who knows how to read music. So I started playing him some stuff, and he said, that's pretty good, but, you really can't put that chord in with this set of chords because it doesn't really fit. You might have to move this finger over here, and then you're going to have to call it something else. I said, well, I don't want to. And he says, well, you got to, or it doesn't make any sense. I said, listen how it sounds when I play it, and then listen how it sounds when I sing it. I said, it doesn't match. He says, but you got to do it a different way, or it doesn't make sense. I said, I really don't care if it makes sense. It just got to sound good. And he said, well, all right then. And then we took it from there, and we had a few lessons. We had a good time with each other because he was a very serious musician, and he knew darn well that I was a guy who had some very good and well-grounded ideas on what kind of sounds I wanted to make. And he said that one way or another I would have figured it out. But he was a good blessing that I got a chance to meet with him in Springfield, Illinois, and did that in his little studio West 2nd. West 2nd Street in the Historic District. And I still hope he's alive and well, and I hope to catch up with him.
I know that we're running a little bit over here, but I'm hoping that you still have a few minutes to spare.
I got a couple. Go ahead.
Okay. I there's a song I want to play, Hoosier Highway. Here it is.
Down that old Hoosier Highway, down that old country road, down that old Hoosier Highway, I'm coming home, where the summer sun can burn you like a demon, and the summer night is clear and full of stars. When you lay down in your bed and talk to Jesus, you thank the man for being where you are. Down that old Hoosier Highway, down that old country road, down that old Hoosier Highway, I'm coming home, where Saturday nights good music and the best girl on your arm, Sunday's church and dinner with the family, and Monday morning you're working on the farm. Down that old Hoosier Highway, down that old country road, let's go slow down that old. Beneath the bluest skies of heaven, and I'll lie in peace with my elder kin. I pray to God I'll go to heaven, but Indiana is as close as I've been. Down that old Hoosier Highway, down that old
truth that you wrote that when you were feeling just a little bit homesick?
Oh, just a tad. It was during the Indianapolis 500 that I got the idea for it, because they always do the song All Along the Banks of the Wabash, and Jim Nabors sings it with Sycamore Trees. And stupid as it sounds, you know, we all got these little things that kind of remind you of home, something that tugs at you, but whenever neighbors would sing that song, I always felt like the room was a little dusty. Get a little tear in my eye. I miss home. I miss home a lot. That's where it all came from.
Is there any truth in the rumor that you're going to be playing the halftime show at an upcoming Florida Gators game?
Not that I'm aware of, but I will be playing some dates in Gainesville, it looks like. One looks to be a showcase. I'm not going to announce that date yet until it gets confirmed, and that's a nice little showcase where a lot of talent is evaluated in a nice public venue, and you got some promoters and agents who are there to look at you and see it. We also got some nice fun things going on in downtown Gainesville, ahead of the Gator Games, and I might be taking the stage at the, of all places, the Bo Diddley stage here, named after one of our own, Bo Diddley. I mean, this town's got a lot of people that did some good stuff, everybody from Tom Petty to Bo, to a couple of the Eagles are from here. Bernie Leadon, one of the original Eagles is from here. Let's see, you got... the people who did Snoopy and the Red Baron, you know, the Royal Guardsmen, those guys all graduated from the UF, became doctors. And then Minnie Riperton, who did a very tender song back in the 70s, Loving You, is from here. We have Stephen Stills from Crosby, Stills and Nash, who lives just down the road from my radio station. You see him walking around every now and then. Then in the Ocala area, you got John Travolta, who's actually done a few records as well as his movies. So, you know, and Bobby Goldsboro, Mel Tillis, and a few others who call this little hunk of heaven home.
Okay, there is one last song I want to play. No, I have a question about it.
Sure.
Feel the Rumble.
Oh.
Oh.
Rumble. I'm down on my knees. God help me, set me free. She's an angel, let her be. Hear the rumble, I'm down on my knees.
Okay, this is the one song out of the collection that I just couldn't quite put into a context. I know you well enough that the rest kind of just fell into place, but this one I'm fighting with. Is there a backstory?
Yeah. Very much so. I think every man decides one day he's going to look in the mirror and he's going to size himself up and see who he is and who he isn't and why he is and why he isn't. And if he's got a good family, a network of support around him, he might realize that you might think that you're the greatest thing on earth, but it ain't you. And you better not be taking it for granted. Marriage, there's an angel, and usually ain't the guy. I'm just saying. So, every time you have a situation with a family or a couplehood, you've got a strong bond there. And sometimes, even in our weakest hours or our stupidest hours, the ones who love us indeed do love us. And you've got to make sure that
You acknowledge that, you return that, and you just do the right thing. You're telling them.
Okay, we're way over our time here, but I'm blaming you because you were late.
Well, you go ahead. I'm always late. How many times have I been on time since you've known me?
Just a couple of real quick last questions. How long does it take to put a song together? You know, I've talked to musicians that have tinkered with things for months, even years. How do you work?
It usually takes about three times as long to write it as it does to play it, because I'll write it all down, scratch it all out, and I'll have a tune in my head. I'll play it, I'll make a quick change, I'll play it again, play it, quick change. About the third time through, I got it pretty much where I want it. And then I just don't fiddle with it anymore, and I put it aside for a little bit. And then I'll jump in into my little recording studio, and I'll do the rough within minutes of writing it. And that way it's fresh in my head, and if I do need to go back and redo it, chances are, before this project, takes full flight, it'll be redone. But at least I'll know what's there and why I like it and why I want certain things to be where they are. But it usually takes, it's a 3-minute song, it usually takes 9 minutes.
Wow. You're a rapid composer.
Well, I also have some short-term memory issues, so I better do it fast.
That's the best excuse I've ever heard.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why I got a little bit of emphasis on getting this done in certain time frames, because if these memory losses increase, anyway, that's another story for another day, but taking real good physical care of myself and exercising and eating a much better diet, and that seems to make the days a lot easier.
TJ, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with me today, and I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blogger News and all of our listeners in wishing you every success. And I also hope that you won't be a stranger, and we can do another program another day.
Well, I would very much like that. I very much would like to look forward to that. And thank you, everyone, for your kindness. And thank you and Jan. I had been a little bit of a recluse, a little bit in my shell, trying to overcome some health issues. And every day is a little bit stronger, but you guys turned on the light, so thanks.
TJ, thank you again, and have a great afternoon. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day. We'll be back again soon. Till then, goodbye.